KQRI's up here testing. Good evening, you guys. K2 Romeo India Whiskey here. As usual on Sunday night, we begin the technical net, which has been around for a lot of years, way back since 1982. Gathering of the clan of curious radio amateurs. Want to know more about how wireless equipment works. Want to really know how wireless equipment works, you ask a ham radio operator, the guy that lives it. He's got, it's in his blood. He lives it and breathes it, touches it, and through all of those experimentations, he finds out how things really work. Very few people seem to really understand what goes on inside of an antenna to make it radiate the signal. Everyone wants to believe that you just apply a signal to an antenna and the signal goes into the antenna and just jumps into space. That's not quite what really goes on. So, some people think it's the people who are listening to the technical net who get a little bit further understanding of what's going on there. There's some pretty fancy physics going on. The technical net is broken up into roughly three sections of not necessarily equal size. The first section is where people sign in because they do have a question or a comment for the net. They give us their call letters, their name, and the word yes, which means they do have a question or a comment. Second section, if we don't reverse the order, is usually Roy, EC2GS, and Dr. Roy gives us the science talk, as well as the people who want to fix it information, if you know what I mean. The third section is run by...
Repeater, timeout.
And we have to make sure we wait for the beeps and don't go beyond roughly a minute and a half when you time out this machine. I hear tell in the future that maybe the timer is going to be changed. The third section is by Paul WS2N, and some interesting space launchings took place this week. So Paul's going to be telling us about those. And Roy has some very interesting things that he has found on the internet that he's going to be telling us about in the world of physics and space. So, we'll get started at this time. If you do have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now. A typical sign-in would sign like this, WS2N, Paul, and yes. So give me your call letters and name, and the yes, because you do have a question or a comment. Sign in right now. K2RI, they'll be listening.
KC2DAW, Curtis, yes.
Well done, Curtis. KC2DAW, I think it is. Okay, so we got Curtis. Anyone else to sign it because you do have a question or comment? Do just like Curtis did. Call letters, name, and the word yes. Go right ahead with your sign-in.
WA2VDH, John, yes.
Another guy who did it right, WA2VDH, John. Okay. These are the guys who either want some information or want to give us some information. Want to know how wireless equipment really works. Do we have another check-in? Give me a call that has a name and the word yes right now. Can't believe we've only got two. There's got to be at least one more. And don't worry about whether or not your question is worthy. There's no such thing as a dumb question. Any question on radio, science, physics represents something a person would like to know more about. So even if you don't have the right way to explain it, don't worry. By talking back and forth, we'll eventually find out what it is you're actually seeking. So don't worry about being embarrassed because you don't think you've got a question that's good enough for the TechNet. Got any kind of a question at all or a comment? Give us your call letters and name right now.
Please, Wally Roy? Joe? Yes?
Okay, there's Joe. We've never heard from him. A brand new guy. I'm having some fun with him. So we're going to start off with Curtis, KC2DAW. Go right ahead with your question or comment, Curtis. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
W, this is KC2DAW. The first question is, I have this new radio, and the fuse is small, a glass tube light, the circular one. I guess it's the smallest one. I need to know what amp that is, because, of course, in the manual it didn't say. And the other question is, I was talking to Bob, WA2AQQ, and he said that NARC, the club that used to be in Eisenhower, moved to a different part of it, Parking Field 6, KC2DAW.
When it comes to the size of the fuse, Curtis, can you tell us the brand name and exact model number of the rig? And is it an HF rig that has 100 watts of peak envelope power output? Tell us whatever you know. KC2DAW. Go ahead, Curtis.
Okay, thanks. It's SoCo Tram ST7900D. The fuse, I don't know, because the way they have it written, it's so small that you can't even see it.
Okay, the 7900D, is that a VHF rig or an HF rig? And what's your guess as to how many watts output it's supposed to give, Curtis? Go ahead.
My guess is probably like 25 or something. I'm not really sure because I don't have the manual on me right now. But it's a mobile, but I'm using it as a base station, though. It's a mobile quad band.
So I presume that's VHF mobile. In other words, 6 meters, 2 meters, 220, 440, something like that. Go ahead. And you think it's around 20 watts?
2 meters, 70 centimeters, 220, and there's supposed to be another one, which is not in the States, I guess, 350 or something.
GS? Okay, I think it was GS. It's probably Roy. Go right ahead, Roy. Maybe you're familiar with that rig.
Yes, thank you, Dick. It's very similar to Rich W2BZ's rig. And if you get a magnifying glass as your best route and look at the fuse, I believe it's similar to his, which is designated an F7AL250V. It's basically a 3/4 inch barrel type, so it should be most likely a 5 by 20 millimeter fast flow fuse that's rated at 7 amps and 250 volts.
Okay, so you're guessing 7 amps, 250 volts. Where do you believe Curtis should go to get one of those fuses? Over to you, Roy.
You could probably go to any hardware store, Home Depot or what have you. Worst case, you can get it at Amazon. They sell them as well.
I didn't know an ordinary hardware store would sell small electronic equipment fuses, but maybe you're right. Okay. It would be interesting to know why the original fuse blew. Occasionally they just blow because of thermal fatigue. They've been around a while and been cycled a whole lot of times. And fast blow fuses are a little bit easier for that to happen. Maybe a slow blow should be put in substitution. So let's go back to Curtis to see if that's enough information for him to go the next step. KC2DAW, K2IW, go ahead, Curtis.
KC2AMZ, with a comment.
MZ, go ahead, I think it's Mike.
Yes, KC2AMZ, Mike. You can tell Curtis if he's looking for fuses, LNL, Larry, Nancy, Larry, Supply, in Syosset, New York, on Robbins Lane.
So you've got good reason to believe that LNL in Syosset stocks that kind of equipment. I wonder if it's a little bit like the store that's on the South Shore. I can't remember the name. Well, maybe that's the one I'm talking about. They got a lot of electronic goodies in there, even some kits and antenna rotators and things like that. Is that true, Mike? Go ahead.
KD2FRU, quick input.
FRU, go and I'll take it, KD2MZ.
George, KD2FRU, auto parts stores have the biggest supply of tubular bus fuses, all kinds, slow blow, fast blow, all different sizes, 1 1/4 inch, 1 inch, 3/4 inch. Big auto parts stores like AutoZone, Pep Boys have big displays in them.
That's darn good information, George, and thank you. I guess some of those fuses are used on modern-day cars and even foreign cars. Is that true, George?
I don't know. I haven't been under the hood of too many cars or under the into the boxes of too many cars these days. But if you want an assortment of fuses, especially the bus fuse assortment, I have found that the big commercial auto parts stores have the largest assortment.
Again, let me clarify, George. Not necessarily the case. They carry 10 amps, 20 amps, 30 amps, and they're mostly blade-type fuses. Go to L&L. That is a true electronic supply store for the industry.
E2FIU, I got a whole bunch of odd sizes about 3 weeks ago at an AutoZone. About a year ago, I was shopping at Pep Boys. Same kind of displays.
Yeah, Mike, you've got a great big fuse panel on some automobiles, and some of the functions, like dashboard lighting or whatever, requires a lot less current, and therefore that fuse would be smaller, and therefore the auto supply house might have them. Back to you on that one, Mike. KD2AUZ? I can't even read my own writing. You got it, Mike. K2IW. AMZ.
Yeah, copy that, but again, be real careful in auto supply stores. Modern cars use blade-type fuses these days. They don't use the barrel bus-type fuses that we're all familiar with. And again, they're usually larger size. You know, I think the smallest the auto fuses goes 5 amps. Go to L&L. They are a real electronic supply store, which is local to us here. They used to sell tubes and stuff, but they deal mostly, well, that's all they deal with, electronics. Yes, and they also have kits there, too.
K2 Bravo Zulu.
Bravo Zulu, start up with your name and go right ahead with your information.
Wondering, where is this fuse located in relationship to the radio?
Okay, so, Curtis is going to tell us that. So, Curtis, looks like if you've got a good-sized magnifying glass or a microscope looking inside the fuse, you might get some hints. And it does sound like L&L is going to be your best possible choice. And so where in the radio your 70900 DST radio, where in that radio was that fuse located? KC2, DAW, K2IW, you got it, Curtis.
Oh, okay, thanks. KC2, DAW. It's with the wire that comes out of the radio, the power line.
So you're saying it was an inline fuse. Is that what you're saying, Curtis?
Yep.
Okay, let's see if Dick's got some further information on that. W2PZ, K2IW. Go ahead, Dick.
Bravo Zulu. As Dr. Roy stated, it's one generation difference from the radio that I'm talking on right now. And, in fact, I did give Roy, somebody else was looking for the value of that fuse. And I gave some letters to Roy, just letters. And he figured out which one it was. Do you remember that, Roy?
Yeah, Rich. He gave me the letters F7AL250V. That's a 3/4 inch barrel, 5x20 millimeter fast flow fuse, 7 amps, 250 volts.
It has to be the same exact one because the radios just have a few cosmetic differences, basically.
Looks like it's a good chance we've pinned it down, then, Curtis. And when I make a trip to a store like L&L, Syosset, you know, go through the process of finding out where they are, and you're pretty sure, we have good reason to believe it's a 7.5 amp fuse of the right physical size you're looking for. When I go to a place like that, if it's not a very
very expensive part. If these things are like, you know, 50 cents a piece or something like that, I would also buy a 9-amp just to be sure that I've got enough of them in my hand so that if I run into some further trouble. And is there any reason that you know of why the original fuse blew? Let's hope that there isn't some kind of a failure in the radio where you're just going to be replacing fuses and they're going to keep blowing immediately. Over to you, Curtis. KD2, DAW. KC2, DAW. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank everybody's help and info and stuff. I really appreciate it. I probably won't be able to remember all the call letters, but nevertheless, I appreciate it. And the fuse didn't break. I mean, the fuse didn't blow. I just wanted to get extra fuses to make sure. KC2, DAW.
That's a good sign. Okay, you're a lot better off. And the guys who were giving you the information was KD2 AMX, is it, I think, Mike? AMZ.
KD2 Zebra.
Yeah, KD2 AMZ was one of the guys. George, KD2 FIU. And Rich, W2 Bravo Zulu. Those are the guys who were giving you the information. I think you said you had a second question, Curtis. KC2 DAW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Oh, yes. I was wondering, does anybody know where the new club is? I mean, a new location for NARC? Because Bob had said, WA2AQQ said that they had moved from the original location to Parking Field 6 in Eisenhower Park. Is that true?
Anybody have any information on that subject?
82 AMZ again. I don't know. It is not in the original building 8. It's someplace in the center of the park, but it's not at the original location. They did move. I just don't know where.
To your knowledge, Mike, are they back on the air with the usual signal strength and so on?
The NARC Club, again, I'm not sure where they are, but what I would suggest is if you could reach out to W2OSR, he goes there all the time. As a matter of fact, he was there Monday. So, yes, they did move. I just don't know where the new location is, but they're in Eisenhower Park.
Okay, so Bob, W2OSR, who is one of the officials of this club and signs in rather frequently. So, in short order, you should be hearing him on the air, Curtis. Back to you, Curtis.
Okay. Thanks again. I was wondering, also, does anybody have the phone number for the LNL? Or do they have a website?
MZ, well, let me answer that one again. You can Google L, you know, NL. That's Larry, Nancy, Larry, however you want to call it. They are in the phone book. You can also Google them. And yes, they do have a website. Probably something like LNL.com, but Google it. They're there.
Is the formal name, Mike, LNL Electronics, or just plain LNL?
I think it's LNL Distributors. But if you Google them, Syosset, Robbins Lane. I used to work across the street at Fairchild Weston Systems, and we used to buy parts from them all the time. But they're in Syosset, they're on Robbins Lane, and it's, you know, L-N-L, not the letter, word and, but N. They're there.
Lima, November Lima. Back to you, Curtis.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, I appreciate it. Okay. Dick, and to Leo, could you put me in there with a comment and question?
Is your comment on the subjects that we've covered so far, Rich, or a brand new subject?
Brand new subject.
To Bravo Zulu with a question.
Bravo Zulu? What's your question, Dick?
Two other subjects, so I'll just wait in line.
Okay. We've got John and Joe ahead of you. I better check with Joe. Joe, are you on a time squeeze tonight where you're not going to be able to stay up pretty late and we should get a hold of you pretty soon? W2RYY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
No, it just depends how much patience I have, that's all.
Okay. The next person on the list was John, W2VDH. Go right ahead with your question or comment, John.
Okay, fine business, Dick here. Good evening to everybody on the net. My question has to do with power distribution. Might have mentioned this before. My question is, for long-distance power distribution, why is it that they use balanced three-phase with six wires plus neutral versus just three conductors and neutral for three-phase? Does it have to do with reliability? Or is it to do with maybe transmission line effects over very long distances? So I was wondering, why did he use the balanced three-phase with six conductors versus the regular three-phase with three conductors? Okay?
Yeah, the six-wire arrangement you're describing, John, I have never seen that. Sounds a bit rare to me. Where have you seen it? How do you know it exists? Give us some information on how you became acquainted with that one, John. Go ahead.
Oh, I've seen it actually here in the island in a few places. Let's see, I think one place I've seen it is on Hempstead Turnpike as you get close to Farmingdale. It's, you know, where the fork branches off. I think for Route 109, they're just after Seaford Oyster Bay. I've noticed that I've seen they come in, there's a substation there, and they come in with balanced three-phase with six conductors. But I've seen it other places too, on the island and off the island, where they use a balanced arrangement where each phase is split. So they have each side of the transformer for each phase that gives them six conductors. Okay.
I'm kind of curious. Are the six conductors, in other words, you get a pair of conductors for each of three phases, is each individual phase of two conductors a twisted pair? What do those wires actually look like? Over to you on that one, John.
They're arranged almost in a hexagon type of arrangement. Two on the top that are spaced apart, then two further down, which are further apart still, and then two on the bottom, which are a little closer together. And then finally, the neutral is usually run over the top of, I think, for lightning protection, because the neutral holds it onto the steel frame of the tower, but it's six conductors. It's not twisted pair or anything. It's full six conductors. And I've seen some of the diagrams where they show the transformers driving them. Each phase, if you can imagine, three single phase transformers, and the secondary is center tap, so that they have a split for each phase. And then all the center taps are tied together for the neutral. Go ahead.
Okay, and the transformer that takes this power at a substation, it's not a composite transformer with six wires going in and three wires coming out. I think you're saying it's three separate transformers where all of the neutrals or grounds are held together. Each individual transformer has two wires going in. Each transformer has at least one wire coming out. And do the three phases of the three individual transformers then get tied to an output which becomes the load side? So are there really three completely separate transformers being fed by this system? Over to you, John, K2LIW.
The substations that I have seen, yeah, they'll show up like a rack of three single-phase transformers that are connected. where they'll come in with this balanced three-phase on the high side, and then coming out, it looks like they're coming out in a Y configuration, because they'll go out on with three inductors and a neutral light, like in a Y arrangement. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. I can see a slight advantage in doing that, and that is the individual phases are now more isolated. When you have the normal three phase with three wires plus a neutral, depending on loading of the individual wires, you can end up with a bit of an imbalance. Phase A might be a slightly larger voltage than phase B, so to speak, where each individual phase is its own pair of wires. The chances of that happening are less likely. Even if you have equal loading of the three phases, the voltage going in is more likely identical with the system that you described. More copper is required. Don't get an advantage in when it comes to voltage drop, from my point of view. You're still going through an awful lot of miles of wire. So you guys out there who are more familiar with power transmission and power distribution systems, if you have any more information on what John is telling us, 6 plus 1 wire, total of 7 wires, a balanced input three-phase system. If you have any more information on that, please give us your call letters right now. K2IW in the TechNet.
82HUC with a comment.
Okay. KD2HUC, I think it is. HUC. Correct me on your call letters. I should know your name. You've talked in to us so often. Please repeat your name and correct me on the call letters, and then proceed. I know that you work with power, I think, with railroad, among other things. Go ahead.
Steve, as far as I know, nowhere on the island exists actual six phases other than our substations where that's the six-phase supply to the rectifiers. Other than that, it sounds to me like what he's describing is a shared pole line with two separate circuits, probably from two separate origins, that for a period of distance or so share the same pole line, which is, of course, saves cost in poles and so on and so forth. KD2HUC, back to Matt.
Steve, John is describing something that he has seen in Hempstead, and it's not two separate systems. He sees six wires plus neutral going two wires at a time going into three completely separate one-phase transformers in order to make the three-phase output. So he has seen it on the island, John. It does exist. I mean, Steve, John has seen it on the island. I think you said you saw it in, I think it was the Hempstead area. Is that the only place where you've seen it, John? WA2VDH, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, where I've seen it is on Hempstead Turnpike, just as you're coming out of Levittown going into Farmingdale. When I go to work, I usually take Seaford Oyster Bay and get off at Hempstead Turnpike, which is near Levittown, and then I go down Hempstead Turnpike into Farmingdale. When I cross along Hempstead Turnpike, right where the spur of the Long Island Railroad crosses there, there's a substation right on the side there, and I've seen this balanced three-phase with six conductors coming in there. I know the top is the neutral because I always see the birds sitting up on a neutral. I think when they get too close to the conductors, I think it ruffles their feathers up, so they know to stay clear from that. But I know I always see the birds sitting up on the neutral. Go ahead.
Yeah, most people never look up, never look at wires. And you're one of those unusual guys that looks at wires for people's antennas, and it looks like you drive around looking up at the power transmission and distribution system for local Con Ed and whatever, PSE&G. So you drive around looking up at the wires and trying to figure out how the system is wired. That's how you ran into this at Hempstead Turnpike. Is that true, John? Go ahead.
Wait, you see with a comment.
I do notice wires a lot. Like I noticed on my own street here, we have three phases coming down the street, and I know that the transformers are pretty much Y connected. because it's just a single wire going up to the 13 kV lines there. And I've noticed in the city, I've seen on the three-phase lines, they'll have two wires coming up. So I think they use Delta connection in the city. But most of the island here, you know, when the streets are the transformers, I think, are Y-connected. But, yeah, I do notice wires and antennas. Go ahead.
JD2HUC, you got it, Steve.
Yeah, I know the spot that he's talking about. That's PSE&G South Farmingdale sub. I actually have a sub right next door to it. And that's not a six-phase circuit coming in. That's two individual three-phase circuits sharing a pole line. And what I think he's mistaken for transformers are the actual oil blast breakers. They're actually three single-pole units. Pretty sure they don't have any single-phase transformers left over there. I thought they were taken out. But I could be mistaken. They might have a couple of single-phase transformers left, but it's not actually six-phase. They're just two individual circuits coming from two other substations, I believe, to the west. I don't remember the map. I don't remember where the two circuits go, but they go to two separate substations, and they just happen to share the pole line along our right-of-way as it crosses our right-of-way and then runs down. It actually runs north of Hempstead Turnpike, and it runs parallel to Hempstead. VP?
Something like VP. Give me the full call letter and name. Go ahead.
N2RBB. I want to check into TechNet. I'm a member of Limewalk. I'm in my car because my stepdaughter's using my office for her bedroom, and I got my radio equipment there, but I can get in when I can. But I'm going to bring up a problem with an RF issue I have, and I solved it, and this is related. So I can tell you what happened. I've got your name. We'll give it to you. It was just run this net grid, and it was just listening in.
N2RVP, what is your name, sir?
Matt, Mike Alpha, Tango Tango. I'm in Setauka, Long Island.
Okay, sounds like you're coming in on the eastern input. Okay, yeah. It sounds like since you're mobile and you don't have very much time, there's a list of three other guys ahead of you. And if we go through those, you won't still be there. So back to you, Matt. How squeezed for time are you?
I can wait. I'll listen. I don't want to interrupt the next. You pass it down to them, and I'll tell you my situation, how it was solved. And it was really, and you can make your comment on it. This is dealing with HF mobile and RF issues. And that's what it's about. But pass it down, and I'll just listen.
Very fine, Matt. So, Steve, you kept calling the six wires that he is seeing, that John is seeing, as a six-phase system. He was fairly sure there were three phases where each individual phase was a balanced pair. So I'm wondering why you kept calling it six-phase. Now you're fairly sure it's three phases, two complete separate systems. Is that true, John? I mean, Steve? Guess I didn't make it clear who I was turning it over to. So it looks like we got a little bit of a mystery here as to what that really is, John. Looks like Steve believes it's two completely separate systems of three phases, three wires each, is what he believes it is, and that you're not looking at pole pig transformers, even though it looks like three separate transformers. The B2VDH. We'll find out more as time goes on. Back to you, John, K2IW.
Okay, fine business. You know, I think Steve may be correct on that because there is a tower that that supports the six conductors, and then further down, they split off three and three to two separate pylons, two separate towers, and like they are going their separate ways. So in this case, I think he's correct. I think this is coming from two separate directions, and it's not the true balanced three-phase that I'm thinking of. But I have seen in other places, especially on long-distance transmission. I don't know, when you get out into the Jersey marshes there. I remember going over on Amtrak, going across to Jersey, heading down to Disneyland. I saw this type of distribution where it was a long distance distribution where it was this balanced three phase. Incidentally, I did see one of those
air blast air blast circuit breakers go years ago when I was living in Illinois, and it lit up the sky. It was a frightening thing to watch. Anyway, I'm going to do some more observing, and I appreciate all the comments from the net. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, thank you, John, for that information. And keep looking up. Very few people look up. Very few people study wire. You can prove that by taking all the people who visit your house and ask each one of them, what's the color of the shingles on my house? And most people who visit you would never know. They don't look up in the air. They look at the ground they're walking on. Next person on the list was Joe, W-H-O-R-Y-Y. Sometimes they ask us some pretty tough questions. Let's see what Joe's got tonight. W-H-O-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
Well, I'll ask a question. I don't know if it's a tough one or not. How does the pulse input function work on an HP 8640 generator? And I believe you own one of those.
Yeah. I believe the pulse input is AC coupled. I think it's a coupling capacitor in there. So you give it a square wave or a rectangular wave, and probably on the positive portions of the wave, it turns on an oscillator that gives you an output. That's what I believe is going on. The person who's a real pro on the 8640 Hewlett-Packard signal generator is somebody who is not with us on the air these days. I think you know who I'm talking about. Maybe some other people know more about the 8640. And by the way, you can download a whole lot of information on the internet. The service manual and the schematic diagrams and whatever of that signal generator. So there is a way to find out. But I think it's AC coupled. That's my guess. I do remember using it at one time. And I think I was feeding it with a kind of a pulse generator, a Hewlett-Packard pulse generator, I can't think of the model number, which is capable of putting out positive pulses, negative pulses, and you can swing the DC voltage on it. And I think the 8640 didn't care, but now I'm not completely sure. The B2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet. Drag your feet in case we got another 8640 signal generator expert on the air tonight. You got it, Joe.
Well, I guess I dragged my feet left there. I guess there's no other uses that use this thing. I've never tried using it. Mine is temporarily out of service, but when I get it back. See, I was just wondering if you can use that function to actually make things simulate a noise generator, like a noise spike generator. Be able to test a noise blanker on some types of receivers. That's what I was sort of getting at. Can it do that type of function?
Okay. When I was using my very highly effective noise blanker, the one that's contained in the R4C receiver, the signal that I was trying to control was the very distinct pulses coming out of the FPS-35 radar at Montauk Point. It was putting out 5 or 10 microsecond pulses, 330 of them per second, and those pulses were 120 decibels above my threshold. So they were driving my 432 converter crazy. I turned on that blanker, and those 5 or 10 microsecond pulses, 330 of them per second, became completely chopped out, and a weak sideband signal off the back lobes of my antenna would easily be copyable when that noise blanker was working. So you don't have to make it a noisy signal, just a completely regulated pulses that are strong enough to give you grief, even when you're, you know, tuned up 30 kc away from it. When the signal is strong enough, it'll give you a lot of grief 30 kc away. And if your noise blanker is doing its job, that problem will go away. So it doesn't have to be a noisy signal. Completely regulated pulses that are strong enough will test the integrity of your noise blanker, in my opinion, Joe. The B2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Well, being that you can't change, you can change the amplitude, I guess, from your pulse generator into the input of the AC40, but that has a fixed current type, a tuner, an attenuator. So the noise pulses are only going to make it go up so far. If that's what I think the thing is actually working, like it's what is it? What is it? Is it gaining on the CW carrier for only as long as the pulse comes in, then it shows the carrier back off?
For the most part, the strength of the pulses, once they're above threshold, does not affect the strength of the pulse RF output from the signal generator. The way you set the main RF attenuator on the 8640 determines the strength of your pulses. So the pulse input only has to exceed threshold to turn on that oscillator. The oscillator acts like it's being fed with a Schmitt trigger, Joe. W2RYY. And by the way, yes, I'm hearing my signal coming out of the eastern input, and your signal I don't hear coming out of the eastern input. W2RYY, K2RIW.
I know that, and I'm not going to explain to you why. You know why already. Think about what I sent you in an email a couple of months ago. All right, think about it very, very carefully. That's why I'm not going to answer your question on that. But you're absolutely correct. I have duplex right now, too. Okay, so it does work in that type of fashion. I just wonder if you could use that plus another type of signal generator to actually have the... Yeah, so I stepped... I guess I'll just come back next week, that's all.
In order to do a completely thorough test, you could be listening to a weak signal 300 kc away from the strong signal. The strong signal is the pulses coming out of the 8640 with the RF set pretty high. And the weak signal could be another FM sideband or whatever signal, which ordinarily would be blanked by strong front-end overload. And you turn on the noise blanker and that problem goes away and you've got a pretty good confirmation. When you get a chance, study the schematic diagram of the noise blanker auxiliary circuit that's made for the Drake R4C receiver. That is the highest performance noise blanker I have ever seen. As I said before, when the Montauk Point radar used to be 120 dB above my threshold, that noise blanker would completely take it out as if it wasn't there. And the weak signal on sideband I'm listening to, 300 KCOA, sounded like there was no interfering signal there at all. So, good luck with that project, Joe. Next person on our list was Rich, wanted to make a comment. N2EO, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Good evening, everybody. Okay, I'm working on something here. I'll tell you what, I'm waiting up to something. It doesn't sound right, but I'm waiting up to something. About 6 to 8 weeks, I'll be moving out to Manorville, Long Island. My house, I got two people who want to give me cash for this house, so it looks pretty certain. The reason I'm asking is, I'm going to need help out there in Manorville. Get what the village shed is now. As you know, I'm disabled. I'm a double amputee. There are other problems. I'm going to need help to, I'm going to buy a new, brand new desk, L-shaped desk. I'm going to need that to be put together. I'll need to have the antennas up, dipole for 1.5 years, you know, it's vertical, two, and I have help setting up my equipment. Now, maybe I can hire somebody, don't know, yes, with a hand. We just gotta like Manorville. Suggested to me by the real estate agent, a downsizing, places I can't afford. State agent said Manorville, my eyes lit up because I used to have a girlfriend out in Manorville years ago. I used to work for her every weekend, and Wolf is a ham out there. I can't get in touch with him. His call letters, a crazy call, N2ASS, that's Greg Messina. I send to me now with a bounce back, because I think probably has a new email address. Back to you, Dick, M2EO.
Yeah, I'm not positive, Rich, but I think Manaville might be in Riverhead Township. If not, it might be in Southampton, but I think it's Riverhead Township. And there are a couple of guys who do antenna installations for a price. To find a hand that's willing to do it for you free of charge would be great, but to find one that's nearby Manaville, willing to travel out there and do the work, that's going to be a bit of a search. But I can think of a couple of hands that do commercially, so to speak, you know, for a price, will set up equipment and install antennas. And sounds like you're going to be selecting a house in Manaville. There are portions of Manaville where the land is pretty high. There's a nice sized tower out there, for instance. Let's hope you end up with one of those so you get good VHF propagation from your new QTH. Sounds like you've already selected a house, or you've got a candidate house out there, Rich. N2EO, K2IW.
N2EO, no. This house is going to be sold soon. And then my real estate agent is, once we have cash, she'll go out there and she's got pictures of available houses. She's going to show me the pictures, and then I'm going to go look. By the way, if anybody needs a real estate agent, call me. I can tell you she's a real bang-up girl. She really is going all the way for me. So I can give you her name and phone number. She works for a company called Carrington Real Estate. But if anybody has information, please email it to me. My email address is Rich, R-I-C-H, underscore, and my call letters, November 2, Echo Oscar, at yahoo.com.
Okay, that website, Rich underscore N2EO, at yahoo.com. So good luck with that search, Rich, for somebody to do that work. That's going to be a little bit difficult to find. Hang in there. The next person on our list, I think, was Matt, N2RVP. Did I skip anybody? Go a little bit slow on pickup there, Matt, to make sure I didn't skip somebody. N2RVP, K2RIW in the TechNet with a little delay.
I did a delay here. First thing, before I tell you my issue, how it was solved, I'm going to help Rich out. Rich, N2EO, I know Greg very well. I've known him since college. He's a friend of my friend that I went to college with. I have his cell number in my phone. So, N2EO, I can email it to you. And then you can count. Greg's a great guy. So maybe he can help you out there. So let me just drop her for a sec so that's a knowledge.
Yes, please email it to me. And anything else anybody knows about some other people that can set the station up for me and put up an antenna, I want to say I'm buying a new put-together desk. I called Home Depot. They don't put them together. That's what I was hoping for. So anybody has any information, tell me. And if you can put that phone number there, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's real.
Nick, you're going to like this phone because this is like really a techie thing. Let me tell you my issue. I have an Icom 706 Mark II G. I'm talking on it now in my driveway. Okay, running, I guess, whatever, 50 watts. But I also do HF, and I have ham sticks. And the rig has been in the car. It's been in several cars. So a few years ago, I went to key up, and the rig shut down. Turned out I had to put a ground strap from the hinge to the metal because it's not bonded. But that problem was solved. And then it was working fine. Then suddenly, when I went on 80, 80 is a tough band, especially with mobile operations, even maybe on 40, I would hear my voice coming into the speaker. So last time I went to the Augusta Flea Market, and I put ferry bead on the power to the battery. It was coming from an external, speaker I used. I wrapped, at the ferry, you know, the, what do they call it? Let me drop it. So what happened was, I had, what is it called, not ferries, I had the, you know, the donuts, and we wrapped the wire around it, and I put it on the battery terminal, and I also, you know, wound the wire, you know, the speaker wire around it, and I thought I solved it, and I still was having aura. Then this week, I said, let me look into it more. So I plugged, my microphone goes to the rig for a catch bar to extend it, so I plugged the microphone directly into the remote head, I disconnected the general speaker, you can hear the speaker built into the rig in the trunk, I still hear an aura. So I go down, let me drop it. Clamp on ferrite torus. Now I had them clamped on the extra coax. That thin coax, it's a diamond mount, and it was clamped on it, just wrapped around. So one of the members of Great South Bay, yesterday when I left, I went to Great South Bay, we wound a few turns, maybe seven turns on two of them, where just before it goes into the, where you plug the hamstick and put from the inside of the trunk, I put my 80-meter hamstick on. I got a little bit of voice come, but not much, and it worked. And then just before I was on the net, I let me try 20 meters. I just worked same from on, and I got a 5.7 signal for it. So very interesting what RF could do, you know, with if you don't do it right with, you know, clamping down and blocking it with all these ferries or coils. What's your comment on that, Dick?
Yeah, when it comes to creating isolation for the electromagnetic interference problem, the chain is no stronger than the weakest link. Anything that's capable of giving you interference, you have to solve every one of them. And it sounds to me like you found a beautiful solution. By the way, you're listed as Englewood, New Jersey, but I think you're out east on Long Island, and I'm hearing you very nicely on the input on the eastern input frequency, Matt. Philip, I think is your first name, but Matt, I guess is your middle name that you're going by. So looks to me like you've moved. N2RVP, K2IW in the TechNet.
It was solved, and it was helped because I'm a ham, and the guy that helped me, he worked for T-Mobile. But I was on the right track, you know, and I ordered more ferry things. But what's so funny about it, I never had my other cars, I never had a problem. I had another thing that was total, and I had a Chevrolet Impala, and I never had a problem. I never had to do all this crazy stuff with the Taurus. And then something changed, you know. Maybe I don't know what happened, but so now I know. When I do an installation in the next car, I'm going to make sure I clean. I don't mind. I ordered more ferries. I bought a whole bunch on Amazon. I'm probably going to put more on the other end where it goes into the rig. I'm just going to go crazy, you know, but I don't think I need to, but I'd rather go over. I'm going to QRT because I want to go in now, but I had to test the 20-meter hamstick out, and it worked great. I mean, I get a 5-7 from it. It was a special event station in Spain, and was on. I looked on TX Summit on my phone, and somebody tried the station, and he got me right away. So I'm going to clear, but I'll talk to you guys soon, okay? 7-3.
Are the techniques you've used so far, Matt, has the interference been knocked down all the way or just enough to be tolerable? Over to you, Matt.
Not completely. I notice on 80, I hear a little bit of it, very slight, but it might, because a lot of people, 80 meters is a wide band, and I think it's hard to do HF mobile with 80 meters. They were just explaining. I mean, I get an extra, I should notice stuff, but RF is very strange, you know, and you know, these cars, the way they make them, I had these Oldsmobiles, you know, and they were made different. These cars don't have all metal in them, so they're unibodies, so it's just the design of the car, you know? So, I mean, but 20, I won't have a problem. I got a 10-meter hamstick, 10 meters comes back, I'd probably be fine with that. But I go on this net in the morning, the 38-30 net, and if I'm away on vacation, I'm going to get on. I want to be on, or my stepdaughter is using my office as her bedroom, and some days they can't get in there. They come down to the mobile, 6:30 in the morning. You know, but now it's solved, and I'm so happy. Next car I get, I'm going to put a trailer hitch mount. I'm going to have an antenna permanently, and I feel more comfortable down on the side. And when if I go on a long road trip, I'm going to get a car with a memory seat. And when my wife is driving, I'm going to play ham radio.
Maybe you said it and I didn't catch it, Matt. The interference you used to be getting Was it squeaks and squawks from all of the computing function of the car, or was it ignition noise from the car? The actual interference you were getting, give us a little bit of a description of what used to be there and the techniques you've used. And except for 80 meters, has it all completely been knocked out? Over to you, Matt.
You're absolutely knocked out. A lot of times when I run HF, I don't like running the engine because you get the ignition going in, unless it's cold out. I'll turn the car off. I'm not going to drive. You know, I don't want to run my battery now, but I'll sit for like 5-10 minutes, make a contact. You know, I'm not sitting there for like an hour, just constant, you know. So, and even if I'm on a net, you know, it's like I'd be the 20th person. But it was nothing in the car, the computer. It was the rig. It was the RF from the radio. That was the problem.
The RF from the radio was doing what? It was interfering with the automobile? Is that what you're saying?
I have an external speaker. And it was that instead of using the built in, the ICOM 7 has got a built in speaker, but it's in the trunk. So I plugged in an external speaker with a long wire, and it was coming into that speaker. I was hearing my voice. That was the problem.
KD2, KDG.
KD2, KDG. Kilo Delta Juliet, it sounds like. Give us your call, your name, and then proceed.
Hey, this is Paul, Kilo Delta 2, Kilo Delta Golf. I thought I'd hop out on the neck, net.
Okay. Do you have something to contribute of the subject that's on the floor right now, Paul? Or you got a brand new subject you want to discuss? Back to you, Paul.
No, actually, I do have something. With the speaker wires, in my own experience, twisting them, you don't even need to use the far edge. Just twisting them basically kills like 90% of the noise. As for far edge, what material are you using? Because some of the materials work better on different bands than others.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that a twisted pair of wires properly grounded on each end has an extreme amount of shielding capability, even though it doesn't look it. So that's, in many cases, that's a very simple thing that's worth trying. Back to you, Matt. N2RVP. By the way, what town are you located in right now, Matt? I'm hearing you on the input, K2RIW.
So we did that right on the top, on the inside of the trunk, just before it goes in to where you poke the ham stick in. And once we did that, it went away. I mean, 80 I get a little bit, because it's a tough band, but I was on 20 just about a half hour ago, and I work Spain. I'm sitting in my driveway, and the guy gave me a 5-7 signal report. I mean, that's like 6,000 miles away. But Spain is like, what, across the Atlantic, 3,000, 4,000 miles away? And he got me, and he gave me a good signal report. So he would have heard RF emitting, you know? So I think this has been solved.
Matt, what town are you located in? Because I'm hearing you on the input. Where are you right now, Matt? Go ahead.
Talking. I'm in my driveway. I'm at 375. I'm right in my driveway, right in front of my garage here. I got a diamond 5/8, you know, wave antenna on my trunk. And I'm running full power.
Okay, yeah, at the beginning got cut off. Did you say you're in Setauket? Go ahead.
I'm in East Setauket.
Okay, very good. I'm hearing you nicely on the input, so you're putting out a good signal. Good luck with that installation. Looks like you're doing very well. Okay. Paul is next. KD2, a Kilo Oscar Golf, I think it is. You got it, Paul. K2RIW in the TechNet.
I'm in TechN2EL.
Someone came in there?
Go ahead first, Paul, and then we'll pick up the comment. You got it, Paul.
All right, cool. Just to clarify, it's Kilo Delta Golf. I'm pretty interested in the topic of the interference because I'm actually dealing with the same stuff. I'm putting up a doublet right now. But what material were you using for the ferrites? Because I know, or at least I did a whole bunch of research on this because I'm putting up my own antenna for HF, a much bigger one. But some of those ferrites don't really work on the low bands and some only work on the high bands. And you could get better performance if you use them. I mean, it's solved, but you can probably get a little better out of it if you use a mix of both.
Go ahead on that one, Matt. What kind of ferret were you using? Where did you buy it? N2RVP, are you still there, Matt? Looks like we've lost them, Paul. N2EO, go right ahead there, Rich.
Okay, Dick. I have to tell you, first of all, I was in bed trying to get in on Echo Link. The Echo Neuralink is not working. I was giving the seller a phone number. There's a company I bought a kilowatt balancer. The other one didn't work. This one works. But they also sell ferrites.